I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
On today's show, my prediction skills are proved unmatched as famous dark horses, Man United. I mean, I don't know how famous the dark horses you can really categorise that as, but I'm going with it. Climb to the top of the WSL table on the back of a double from Ella Toon. My top goal scorer prediction also.
All right, move on.
Their rivals did their best to keep up, including Man City, who have finally won a WSL game. Well done, Man City. Aww, go on, nice. You guys. You did well there. Go on. We get stuck into all of that. Last night's Ballon d'Or winner, Alexia Putellas, and a look ahead to the return of the Champions League. And that's all in the company of DAZN's football reporter, Alex Ibaceta.
Welcome.
Look at that. I think that's the best intro I've ever gotten.
You're very welcome. We like to make all of our guests feel incredibly welcome, incredibly hyped, incredibly boosted and full of confidence to go into the podcast. That's what we aim for here. So yeah, I'm glad that you feel very, very, very welcomed into your first time on the podcast. So lovely to have you. Rach, I mean, you've got a touch on the Ireland qualifying for the whole World Cup thing. Heard it was a big deal for you.
Just a bit.
And your country. So what were your thoughts on that? I mean, we were obviously messaging a little bit after the game. I felt emotional knowing how emotional you were after that. But I know obviously you were ever the professional, had a lot of things to do, getting content. You know, it wasn't just a case of you being able to celebrate and go crazy with your pints of Guinness. It was a different thing for you. How was it?
Oh, it was amazing. Even though I was working it, which kind of, it makes it weird then because you can't just sit there jumping up and down. You're like, oh no, actually I have to take photographs. I have to get some photos and like video content on my phone. But what was lovely was there was some other Irish photographers there who I've met at previous Ireland matches back in Dublin. And they were as big into it as I was. And after the goal was scored, you know, one of the guys ran down the touchline to get some photos and he came back and we had a massive high five. Like we were all living and breathing every pass, every shot. We had, you know, the other games on our phone that we were keeping track of. And it just felt like, it sounds so cringy, but it really was their moment because so many parts of this have gone their way in order for them to get this. Like going into it, winning the game against Finland, they had to have other results go their way in order for them to miss playoff one. And that happened. And then in playoff two, they probably still had a very difficult chance of going straight to the World Cup. We tried to go through this in the last episode and it was...
You did really well.
Thank you. I still got it wrong. It was quite crazy, but we basically needed results to go our way in order for this to happen. And they did. You know, Scotland missed a penalty, had it saved. There were so many things where I was kind of like, I think this is going to happen. Like, even though Scotland played better, I think this is going to happen. And Ireland, they had a game plan. They stuck to it. There was a lot of heart and mouth moments at the end as Scotland kind of piled on the pressure. But Katie McCabe said, you know, we could have done that in our sleep. We were totally chilled. We were totally relaxed.
Really?
We could have done that till the cows came home. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
It looked like a lot of emergency defending to me.
It was. But apparently they're all right with that. They're totally used to doing emergency defending. But irrelevant. Into the first ever major tournament and a World Cup at that. So it will make my job next summer maybe a little bit more difficult, but I don't mind. I'm absolutely, yeah, buzzing.
That sounds like a really good, troublesome issue to have, to be honest.
I'm not complaining.
I mean, I was watching the game. We were kind of messing a little bit in between you doing all the fantastic photography and stuff that you were doing. And yeah, I thought, I mean, the game, I thought it was going to be Scotland's. I thought as soon as they got that penalty, Caroline Weir, she's not going to miss this. Caroline's going to bed it. They're going to get goal after goal. And it's going to be Tassar Island. You tried your best. Better luck next time. But yeah, I thought, you know, that was such a lucky moment. And like Brosnan, I thought it was a fairly comfortable save, not too much in it. Caroline, obviously, kind of
soft pen, wasn't it?
Very soft pen, yeah. And then also throughout the entire sort of the 90 minutes, I felt like Scotland had so much more possession, so much better organised. But then the defensive organisation of Ireland was second to none. I felt that the back five they had kind of compressed everything into the middle, and that seemed to be where they sort of felt most comfortable. But
they also had like Megan Campbell and her insane throws had the ball in the back of the net in the first half, but nobody managed to get a touch on it. And then right before half time, the ball was cleared off the line three times by Scotland. So for me, while Ireland didn't have as much possession, they were more efficient with the chances they had because they had more shots on target to kind of chances versus Scotland. So that's what kind of Vera Powell touched on as well is, and that's what Scotland as well touched on was that, you know, it's about what chances you put away. And despite all the chances Scotland had, they weren't getting loads of them on target. So, you know, we'll take it.
It's Ireland's year. Let's see how they fare at the World Cup. Obviously, we'll probably be covering that as well because we cover all the important games here on Upfront. And they will be probably the most important. We might even be out there. We'll speak to producer Charlie and see if we can get some first-class tickets out to Australia and New Zealand. Hint, hint, Char. Right, so we've been back into the WSL this week, and what a week it has been. I mean, lots of big games, lots of big results, lots of drama, a bit of sort of WSL going on in some of the games here. But we'll start with sort of Man United, Brighton. I mean, and we'll start with that because obviously I made some big predictions about Man United and they seem to be coming through because Man United are sitting top of the table. And I know it's very early days. I know that. Okay, I'm not going to get ahead of myself and start
thinking. Sounds like you are getting ahead of yourself.
It does sound a little bit like that. I'm a little bit excited.
You're absolutely tooting your own horn right there.
100%. And also because Toon was involved in that and she's also going to be top goal scorer. But I mean, Man United have faced Reading, West Ham and now Brighton. What I would say, I suppose, it's a very middle ground start to the campaign. They haven't faced the big competitors yet. So we were kind of expecting that they probably would pick up points in games like this. But I thought a very confident, very stylish performance against Brighton. Probably scored some more goals in the second half. I think they took their foot off the gas a little bit. But it was a great game to watch. Alex, did you manage to catch it?
No, actually. But I did watch bits and bobs, obviously, on top of the highlights. But I think Man United are a very underrated team overall. You look at the players that they have, and they have, you know, they don't have, it's really complicated to explain because they don't have, you know, the top of the top elite player names, but obviously they still have Elatoon, Alessio Russo, Mary Earps, who are coming off, you know, some of the best football they've played in their entire career in the Euros. But then you have, you know, Onabatye, who's actually playing amazing, Maïla Tessier, who I think has been really, really impressive for United as well. Katie Zellum, you know, Lucia Garcia, they have names that go on forever. And even on their bench, you know, Adria Leon, she's, you know, she's never been within the top players of the world, but she's been consistently playing for, you know, really good teams. And on Team Canada, she's been, you know, she's a starter for there. So I think Man United have been kind of overlooked because of that. But you look at their team and they're just a very consistent, strong team throughout the entire board. And obviously with Elatoon and once Alessio Russo comes back, I think that's going to make a big, big difference. But I think they have a team to push forward more than they did last season.
I think what will help them are the fixtures that they have in the opening kind of 5-6 games. Mm. Yes, those teams have been lower down the table, but what it allows Man United to do is to build some consistency. And I think that's maybe what they've lacked in previous seasons, is it might have been a little bit up and down. And I think it's good for them to get these wins and these strong performances under their belt. I think they have new players who've come in this season, but I think they're slotting together really nicely.
Yeah.
We're starting to see Skinner's kind of style of play. They love to have possession. They love to control the game, build from the back. And it's just about, I think, being consistent throughout the 90 minutes. We've talked about it before where they often take their foot off the gas in the second half. I think we saw that a little bit against Brighton. As you said, probably should have scored more goals. And I think that's, Mark Skinner said it himself, like he's not getting ahead of himself. You know, he still thinks there's a few more things that they need to do to be kind of title winners. And I think one of those is being consistent throughout the 90, because better teams won't allow you to take your foot off the gas in the second half. And they need to be keeping on it, keeping their foot on the gas all the way through the 90. And I think that's something he'll be looking at. But if I was a United fan, I'd be pretty happy right now, because they're building that confidence, they're building a rhythm and consistency. And I think that will really stand to them when they do come up against Chelsea and Arsenal and Man City.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in a game like that, they can afford to take their foot off the gas because you've already scored so many in the first half. So you've already set yourself up for a fairly good, strong second half anyway, even if you can. But like you said, that is not going to go unpunished with bigger names. And I think that in a way, they've been very lucky with how the results have, with how the fixtures have gone for the start of the season. Like their next game, they're facing Leicester, probably another opportunity to pick up points, really, unless there's a big upset there. And then Durham in the Conti Cup, which is going to be probably another chance again to pick up those points. And then Everton at the end of the month. So it kind of feels like they could potentially, sit themselves. Yep, there's still a long way to go for the title, but definitely a very good start to a campaign to be getting that Champions League spot. November is obviously going to be the big month for them, facing Chelsea and Arsenal back to back. And I think that's going to be the first opportunity that we'll see to, you know, really see where they are against the kind of top dogs.
I think winning is a habit, and I think playing ruthlessly is a habit. And that's something they need to be doing in these games for me, in order to really, because they always challenge Chelsea and Arsenal. they're a bloody difficult team to play. And I think just getting that those kind of habits in their back pocket and up until they come to these games, I think will really stand to them. So that's the area that I want to see United improve on. Now, they did score against, I think it was West Ham in the second half, but I want to see them playing like that, like they can, mm-hmm. through the 90, and they'll be real contenders.
Yeah, and I think defensively, they also look incredibly strong. And Mary Earps, again, putting off an absolute cracker of a long distance strike from Elizabeth Turland, which I thought was unreal. So she's been obviously going from strength to strength before the Euros, but also absolutely in the Euros, and now she seems to be I don't know, I think she just fills everyone in front of her with a lot of confidence. She's strong, she's been really consistent, no big errors so far, so I think she's also going to be one to watch. I'm just putting my flagpole in the sand
for
there,
sure.
That one, obviously. The next big game, we've got to touch on Everton v Chelsea. Just a bit of a shout out, I suppose. First off, Emma Hayes out for the foreseeable future with an emergency hysterectomy. Thought it was a really nice touch from the men's and the women's teams players coming out and doing the warm-up, wearing the sort of training gear, saying get well soon, Emma. I don't think it's really clear yet when she's going to be back in the fold, but we've got Denise Reddy, who I didn't really know too much about, because Emma takes the kind of crown, doesn't she, of Chelsea, and you don't really know much about the backroom staff or the assistant staff. But yeah, she's stepping in as manager for now, previously with the NWSL Chicago Red Stars for 2 years, and then assistant coach for the USA under 20s women's national team. So obviously the first game underneath her, but yeah, what do you guys think?
It's going to be really interesting. I think Chelsea have been struggling a little bit to get that consistency under their belt in terms of performance, in terms of formation, in terms of lineups. I don't think they've gotten that consistency just yet, so it is a bit of, I wouldn't say a concern, because I think the technical staff, I think under Emma Hayes, I'm assuming Emma Hayes will have her staff, you know, in line with what she wants to do, how she sees, and the staff kind of like take that on board. So I am very curious to see how Chelsea keep progressing, because they're coming up against the Champions League, which is going to be quite interesting to see. But I think they need to figure out what their best formation is. And I think you're seeing kind of that affecting players just a little bit. You know, Khadisha Buchanan, amazing player, hasn't really found her feet in the WSL and with Chelsea yet. And I don't know if that's just because it's out of her comfort zone, whether she's just going through a rough patch, or that has to do with the fact that Chelsea haven't really figured out how to use their back line. And then you start going forward and you see different names, different things. You know, Sam Kerr playing with Lauren James now, for example, that's a brand new partnership that hasn't really been explored as much yet. And you see kind of this inconsistent play with Chelsea, and they haven't really found their form. And it's a bit of a shame because they have, you know, Chelsea have an amazing squad. But in terms of Emma Hayes, I am kind of curious to see how they do without her, considering that they're in that transition period of kind of really finding themselves again.
I think given the firepower Chelsea have, one of the areas of maybe slight concern is their shots to shots on target ratio. Is often they seem to always have quite a lot of shots, but not many on target. So they had 22 shots against Everton, but only 8 of them were on target. So that's probably an area that they'll obviously be looking to improve on. I think for me, so Pernilla Harder was back. She scored 2 goals first game for Chelsea this season because she's been out injured, and I think maybe you could tell that it was her first game back of the season.
It's not like she wanted to prove a point there or anything.
But no, but I felt like she was a little bit rusty, actually. And I don't think she played all the games with Denmark on the international break. I think she only played a bit of one. So for her to be rusty, miss a few chances that she would normally put away and still score 2 goals should be worrying for other teams. I think having a rusty Pernilla Harder scoring a brace says a lot. And I think she may have been the link potentially that's been missing for Chelsea to try and link all of this back line and front line together, because there's been a bit of, for me, a number of different players in midfield. And I think she does so much off the ball and in the lead up to goals that it's often missed because she's not necessarily always assisting or scoring herself. So I think it's great for them to have her back and for her to get a brace when she's feeling a bit rusty, because I think that will be a big confidence boost for her going into PSG this week. But I agree with you. I think it's just taken them a little while to settle and to find their feet. So, yeah, I think it's good for them to get that win, but it was close. It was, you know, it was 2-1 up until the 90 plus minute when Neve Charles got the third. So, yeah, I think we'll see how they fare against PSG. It'll be a tough one.
And what do we think about that kind of controversial penalty call? Any views on that at all? Because, like, for me, I watched it back over and I didn't think Brosden made any contact on the player. And I just, for me, I don't think that's a, I think that should have been looked at again. I think that completely changed the face of the game.
On initial viewing, I thought it was a pen. But I think, I also think Girl Wrighton went into that knowing that she'd kind of maybe lost her chance on goal.
100%.
But could get a pen. And I think Brosnan kind of fell for it.
Jeez. Yeah. I mean, which is like, it's a bit of shame because obviously we don't have VAR. So if that's our view at first sight, you're assuming that the ref saw the same thing and they can't really back out of that.
I just feel really aggrieved about that as a goalkeeper, personally. Yeah. Next goalkeeper. It wasn't a goal. But no, I thought Charles's goal was absolutely incredible. You know, lofty ball over the top. And it wasn't, you know, she had to take on 3 defenders and she did that. So I'd be really embarrassed, actually. I think that was an embarrassing moment for Everton. But otherwise, I think they've had sort of a really good run so far. I mean, we're never too sure. I feel like we go into the start of the season not really knowing how Everton are going to be. Are they going to impress? Are they going to deliver something this year? Are we going to big them up and it all falls to shit? But actually I think they've had a fairly good run given the games they've had.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't got many points on the board, but they definitely have improved on last season. At times they were floating around the relegation zone last season, and I do think they'll fare better, that they'll finish more comfortably mid-table. I still think they just need more time to settle and allow Sorensen to kind of bring in his style of play. But you can see it, like you could see it early on what he's trying to do. It's just going to take a little while for the players to adapt to that and adapt to working with each other. But yeah, I think there's definite signs of improvement.
So you think there's going to be a sort of a consistent mid-table Everton this year?
I think so.
All right. Solid, trustworthy, dependable Everton in the mids. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you called it. More hot takes here. More hot takes here. Right, next game. We've got to touch on Man City Leicester. Massive congratulations to Man City for getting those points. I mean, come on. First points of the season. Difficult start for Taylor's side. I know we give him a lot of grief, but probably rightly so. It kind of echoes last season. Didn't have the best start. You know, they hadn't won a game up until this point, until mid-August. They'd lost against Villa, lost against Chelsea. And this seemed to be their sort of comfortable moment. Obviously playing a team that is way down the table, but I feel like this is them maybe starting to turn around their fortunes. Yeah, Alex, did you catch this one at all?
This one I didn't, but I, even without watching it, I have so much to say. it's all about Gareth Taylor. I'm just looking at the lineup, and Lai Alexandri is not a midfielder. she is not a midfielder. Jorge Vilda on the national team has tried to input that for so, so long, and it just has never worked. So the fact that Gareth Taylor kind of took that on, it just made me laugh really, really a lot. But
we've
you
never
saw
been fans of Gareth Taylor in this podcast, so I'm glad
that
you're continuing
this theme.
Oh no, me neither.
It's fine. It's I can go on about Gareth Taylor for a long time, but it's but for once he, you know, when you see Leigh Alexandre, Alex Greenwood as a centre back pairing, that could be so, so good. That could be really, really good, and that's not even considering that you have Tunkara in that bench as well. But where it goes wrong is the midfield. Gareth Taylor just has no idea what to do in that midfield, and it's really, really confusing because you have, first of all, I don't understand Man City's recruitment strategy because you have all these mix of players that make no sense put together. And you can see Gareth Taylor struggling to put out his best 11 because he just has no idea what to do. Not only does
you're not holding back here, Alex. I love this.
Oh no, I am holding back a lot. You have no idea.
Oh, this is you holding back.
This
okay,
is me
wow.
holding back.
We'll do like an upfront night special, and that'll be like where you really pull out all guns blazing. Like, yeah.
I could do this forever. I promise. It's so confusing because Man City have such a good team. When you look at the front three, Chloe Kelly, Bunny Shaw, and Lauren Hemp, my word, that front trio is just like ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It is really frightening. Yeah. But then you look at what Man City do, and it does not live up to any potential. And then I just feel bad, but that's mostly down to Gareth Taylor just being unable to organize his team in a manner that you can actually play to their maximum potential and individual potential. But it is, you know, really good that they got a win because I do like a lot of the players that Man City have. You know, Lauren Hemp, Bunny Shaw, Chloe Kelly, amazing players that deserve a lot. Mary Fowler, I think, is, you know, one of the best young players that there is right now. But it is just really interesting. Man City and Gareth Taylor is just, it's a very interesting prospect.
What we said when Ciara Walsh left was to not try and fill the hole with other players, not try and, you know, replace Ciara Walsh because you can't. Play with the players that you have to the best in the best positions that they play in, rather than saying how can we. It's almost like he's trying to moneyball the situation, you know, like we can't replace her, but we can get in three other players that together make one Ciara Walsh. And you're like, forget about Ciara Walsh, she's gone. Like, stop trying to replace Ciara Walsh. And I think we've touched on that in previous podcasts. I thought they played pretty decent against Chelsea. And I said this in a previous episode. I thought they were decent, actually. And I thought Bunny Shaw looked so dangerous. She really put that Chelsea defence under a lot of pressure. But, you know, I thought this match would be an opportunity for them to maybe flex their muscles a little bit, show what they can do. Leicester didn't make it easy. You know, Man City had 70% possession and only had the one goal until the 72nd minute. After this, there was obviously a crazy 10 minutes because they had a goal on 72nd, a pen missed on the 78th, a goal on the 79th and another on the 82nd. So I think Leicester kind of maybe forgot how to football for 10 minutes, but they didn't make it easy for them. But, you know, I think it will do them the world of good in terms of confidence. And I think they need that, Man City.
Yes, 100%. I think they've now set themselves a bit of a trap because that third Champions League spot now looks a little bit in the balance if they don't start picking up their results.
Said that last season.
I did say that last season.
We both did, and they still got it.
They just got it. It was a just. All right, you're not guaranteed to just take that because you're Man City. Okay,
absolutely not. But I just wouldn't write them off just yet, is what I'm saying.
No, it's early days. I'll give you that. All right, fine. Thanks for reining me in. I appreciate that.
It's all right. That's what I'm here for, man.
Cool. I mean, Leicester also a massive worry. Looked to be sort of heading down the same path again as last season, yet to pick up points after defeats to Everton, Tottenham and Aston Villa. Only taken 1 point now from 11 WSL games. Obviously, narrowly avoided relegation last season. Do we think this is a kind of sign that we're heading down the same path again for Leicester?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame about Leicester because they came up to the WSL with a lot of potential. And I think they started the season last season with kind of that momentum that was fine, but they've kind of disappointed everyone that had high expectations of them. And I think rightfully so that we had high expectations of them, considering how much backing the club had put into the women's team and kind of the group feeling that the team had. You expected them to get a bit further, but I don't think they've changed enough from last season to be able to get out of that same position that they were in. And I think this season they might struggle a bit. And this season, I think, is a bit more, when you look at the top four or five, it's a bit more even. You know, Arsenal, Chelsea aren't the same that they were last season. They've been struggling a bit to get that consistent, that consistency to be able to be, you know, to have that gap. Man City have, you know, Gary Taylor managed to get 4-0 win, so who knows how that's going to go. But then you have Man United playing into that factor, and then you have the bottom kind of part of the table that it's open for anyone. So if Leicester City don't kind of start getting their shit together, basically, and start getting points where they need, they could easily fall back into that relegation spot, doing more than they did last season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. I still think they could nick points off teams around them. Maybe your Brightons, maybe your Reddings, depending on how they play. Because, you know, they did make it difficult for Man City in the first half. They made it difficult when they played Spurs. That was not an easy win for Spurs. And it's one thing to have to defend resolutely for 90 minutes, which is generally what Leicester have to do. But they need to be creating chances at the other end of the pitch, and they're not doing that. They had no shots on target against Man City. So that's a big area of contention, I guess, or an issue for Leicester, is creating those chances.
I think it's that. I think this could be the season that we see them go back into the Championship, if I'm honest. I think you nailed it there, because I do think the sort of setup, the infrastructure behind the scenes, all the coaching staff, the kind of, the resources that they have seem to be great, but they don't seem to recruit very well. And I think in this league now, the recruitment is so elite, so top level, so stellar, that I just don't think they're able to compete on a basis. I mean, not having a single shot, a single chance against, yes, a top side, but still not a single chance in 90 minutes is not good enough for this league. Yeah, that's my thoughts on that. Sorry, Leicester. And I do like Leicester as a team. They're a good outfit. All right, finally, so we're going to touch on Aston Villa, West Ham. West Ham walk away with the points. Pretty even battle, I'd say. 2-1 West Ham. It was controversial, not only because of the score lines and the points, and it was more controversial because we seemed to end up in a full on out and out smashing battle between Mailing and Sissoko at the end, which has obviously drawn quite a lot of attention. I mean, my take on this, and I've kind of watched it a few times, because obviously the big headlines are Sissoko assaults a player on the pitch, is red carded,
assault,
or like take, well, like decks, or tries to deck Mailing, basically.
Fine. Okay, sorry, I thought someone had actually used the word assault.
No, that's a bit of a Sun headline, isn't it? I'll take that back. Sorry about that. That's so dramatic from me. But I kind of watched the incident, and I, you know, when you look at how the progression of that, it's Mailing who commits the foul. She's pulling Sissoko back quite aggressively. That's a foul. I think that's probably a yellow card foul anyway. And then Mailing kind of lashes out a little bit, Sissoko lashes out a little bit. And then Mailing then comes towards her again. Sissoko's like, back the hell away, and lashes out again. Mailing comes towards her again, and then Sissoko lays the big one on her chin. So in my opinion, I think that's a red card for both. I think they're both behaving in a way that's obviously not appropriate. I don't think it should have just been Sissoko with the red on that. But Rach, you said you felt differently.
Yeah, I thought the ref got it right. And maybe that's controversial. I don't know, because there's been a lot of opinion over this particular incident for some reason. I just thought it was a yellow for Mailing. We've had a number of instances where I've seen players physically like shove other players kind of away from the ball. It happened. Bethmy did it against Barcelona. She was getting nudged and nudged and nudged by one of the players, and she turned around and just shoved her in the chest with two hands, and she got a yellow card. Similarly with that spat between Maeve Clemoran and Ashley Neville and Katie McCabe at the North London Derby. Similar situation, pushing and shoving, argy bargy. They both got yellow cards. So for me, Mailing was a yellow card. And you say that she was the aggressor, but you also touched on the fact that Sissoko, while she was backing off, was swinging her hand. So Mailing's kind of reacting to that too. I don't think you should get a yellow card for, you know, being angry and walking towards someone. So for me, yellow was right for her reaction. Mm-hmm. And for me, and Sissoko was red for, she swung out three times and properly connected with the last one. So look, it happens, right? The red mist comes down. We are humans after all, and you end up kind of forgetting what you're doing in the situation, and you react to what's going on in front of you. So I'm a little bit surprised that the incident became so contentious, because I thought the ref got it right. But I think maybe what continued to draw the attention to it was the fact that then there was a whole kerfuffle on the sideline as well, which didn't help. And what also didn't help is we didn't seem to have enough camera angles to actually allow people watching on the FA player to see that. So we were getting it from Yeah, we were getting it from reporters on the ground that this was happening, and none of us could really see it. So I think maybe that's what kind of blew it up. But I also think it's gotten way more attention than maybe it needs to, because for me it was a yellow and a red, and it's kind of
all right,
done and dusted.
Alex, what are your thoughts? Are you a red or a red yellow? Where are you sitting on this? No sitting on the fence either.
It depends.
She can sit on the fence if she wants to.
No, absolutely not. Not today.
red or red yellow. It's a hard one because it's. I think for me, it's whether you put Mei Ling and Sissoko on the same level. I think Mei Ling could have easily gotten a red, especially if we're counting that foul before as a yellow. Yeah, she could have easily gotten a double yellow for the same in the same moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, great.
I think if a second yellow would have happened, I think that would have been fine. I don't know if a red would have been fair, but I think it would have been fine either way. I'm not really giving a solid answer, but I think two double yellows for Mei Ling and a red for Sissoko, I think that would have been fair.
I think if we had VAR, that's potentially what would have happened.
Mm. Yeah.
We'll take this to a vote on the upfront feed. we need some people who are going to define this either way, because this is just not good enough, guys.
But I also didn't think it was that massive a thing for it to become such a thing. And also, I think
it's just part of the match, isn't it?
I think Sissoko's gotten some abuse online, which, calm the fuck down, guys. It's absolutely ridiculous. This kind of stuff does happen. Thankfully, it doesn't happen too often. But I think she's received some abuse online. Mm-hmm. I think some of it's been racist as well, which just blows your fucking mind. Jesus Christ, like, it's football. This shit happens. She's gotten a red card. She's got to take her punishment. Like,
get over it.
Get over it, man.
Go on. Yeah. Love that.
Not to compare either, but it happens in the men's game a lot. And just people just move on.
Yeah. Like, it just happens just every bloody on. Week. It's a weekly thing.
I just think it was that bench then, because then we had Paul Konchesky, an assistant manager, red carded as well, and they got sent off. And maybe that just made it kind of a bigger thing than it actually was.
What's the WSL without a bit of spice?
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Right, next up, I mean, we've got to talk about the big news, fresh, hot off the press from last night. Puteus, Wins it again. Wins the old Ballon d'Or. Becomes the first female player to win the Ballon d'Or 2 years in a row. Bataillus obviously being very, very lovely about it. Certainly, the award couldn't have been possible without her lovely teammates, thanking the staff and coaches at Barcelona, not the Spanish national team. obviously, she's at the moment, you know, sorting out, rehabbing, suffered a long-term injury at the start of the Euros, but has had an incredible season with Barcelona, making them, you know, a massive part of the fact that they've won this historic title last season. Won all 30 matches. I mean, Alex, I've heard that you're a bit of a Putellas fan. I've just heard off the grapevine, not biased in any way at all, but heard that you're Bezzers.
It's the first time I hear her name last night.
Really?
It's the first time.
One to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, one to watch. You know, she's going to be big. Just
remember
watch out.
This name, guys.
Remember her name.
You heard
she's going to be
first.
Big. I think for me, putting everything aside, I think Alexia Putellas deserved to win because of the season she had. And, you know, we're not counting the Euros because she got injured the night before, which is very unfortunate. But you look strictly at the season that she's had. Invincible season of the league, triple at home. She came out, depends how you see it, because obviously joint top goal scorer of the league, Asisia Ochoa-La Gaze, and right under that, I think it was 4-goal difference, was Alexia Putellas. So she came out, if you want to count it, second top goal scorer in the league, top assister in the league as a midfielder on top of that. Joint top goal scorer in the Champions League. Obviously got to the final, gave Barcelona a big moment in the final as well. I think that was also back to that debate that we were having before of player of the match giving that big moment over 90. Alexia gave that to Barcelona in a really bad match in the final. But she just shows up in those big moments. And that's not even looking at, you know, how she actually plays football, because she's an outstanding player. She's, you know, she's smart, she's intelligent. She gives Barcelona that stability in the midfield, that stability overall. And again, that's not even talking about her numbers and trophies. So I think overall, I think she outrightly deserved that considering the season that she and Barcelona had last season and how important she was to that Barcelona season. But that's just... that's just my opinion. So,
I mean, that's an incredible way to set out your case for Putellas. I'm almost thinking that you might have been on the panel for that Ballon d'Or decision. If I'm honest, it was made up of journalists and we don't really know who they are. So if you want to come out and come clean now, Alex, and let us know that that was your vote, we
would. I actually voted those 50 times. It was me.
Rach, I know you feel a little bit differently.
Yes, I present my case.
If you'd like to set out your case, I'd love to hear it.
Thank you so much. Firstly, I'd like to start by saying I think any of those top three could have
objection.
Won.
Objection.
If not more.
Nice. Overruled.
Thank you. In terms of the quality in Europe is growing, which is incredible. Like, because we've had times before where we're like, how did that person... Anyway, moving on.
Who are you referring to there, Rach?
Well, I thought it was unusual Megan Rapinoe won it.
Yeah, but we'll think it.
I am still on the Beth Mead train. I think 14 goals and 19 assists in 40 games and breaking the all-time assist record in the WSL, having probably the season of her domestic career, or her career domestically, I should say, and then going on to win the Euros and dominate in terms of individual awards there, winning the Golden Boot and player of the tournament, scored 20 goals and assisted 17 in 19 games for England, which is just insane. Other than winning perhaps the WSL, which they lost by a point on the last day, I'm not sure what more Beth Mead could have done to win it, because she was excellent both domestically and internationally. And I do think we should give more weight to international tournaments when there are major tournaments in that particular year. I think that's only fair, because it's showing consistency across not just your domestic team, but also your international team, international competitions as well. So that, for me, I just think there wasn't really much more she could have done. I think maybe if Arsenal had won the WSL, there was only a point between it, which is mad, between Putellas and Beth Mead, maybe that would have pipped it. But, you know, I think oftentimes people say, hear you saying, I think X should have won, means you don't think the other person who won it was good enough. And I'm not saying that. I think Putellas is an unbelievable player, the likes of which we've not seen before, and is absolutely good enough to win it too. So I'm just glad that it all comes down to fine margins, and I'm glad we're at a point now with the Ballon d'Or and with these awards that you're getting the right players in the right, you know, the top 10s and the top 5s and the top 3s, like the best players are there, and it's showing that people actually are starting to, sometimes you wonder if the ones voting really know what they're talking about. So at the end of the day, I've no major issues with Mateus winning it. It's not a controversial decision. It absolutely makes sense. But I think Beth Mead had the year of her life in terms of her career. So,
well, I mean, without sitting on the fence, because that's not what we do here, Alex. I mean, I've got a rule in Rachel's favour, if I'm honest.
High-fiving, man. Yeah,
come really? On.
This is why you should
come
be in
on.
The studio, because then we could actually high-five.
But we wouldn't be high-fiving you because you got this decision completely wrong.
that's a
complete joke. Obviously, it's not. She's been incredible. But no, I think I've got to agree with you. I think what more does Beth Mead need to do to win that thing? Like, sell along? I think she's done.
Go further in the Champions League and have won a title.
I do agree with that, though. It is unfortunate that Beth Mead has had the season of her life and she still has to miss out on it. Like, I'm not saying that. I still do think that Alexia does deserve it, but it is unfortunate. I think it's with these awards, like, you see Lewandowski, who's still waiting for his to come after that one season. You're still waiting for, you know, certain men's players to be recognized to a certain, you know, Jude Bellingham, for example, yesterday missed out on the young players, on the Golden Boy. You know, Gavi, yes, grand, but in these awards in particular, that second and third place can easily win it, and they probably do deserve to win it, but they're always going to miss out to that number one. So it's that ongoing disappointment of second place, essentially.
You can be amazing individually, but if your team aren't equally amazing, do you know what I mean? And you're not then winning those awards, that can kind of maybe lose your point.
And I think that's where Arsenal kind of let down Beth Mead in that sense. Because they, you know, you lose the FA Cup, you know, no domestic trophies at all last season.
Yeah.
It was a bit unfortunate because I think that could have, you know, put that under Beth Mead's belt and given her that little boost. But it is unfortunate that is what Alexia has with Barcelona. She had the domestic triple, and that has a big weight onto it outside of, you know, individual performances. So I think Arsenal did let down Beth Mead a little bit there. But yeah, it's one of those that, yeah, as you said, Rachel, that it's gotten to the point where it's a healthy competition. It's a disappointment. You know, it is a disappointing competition that the fact that there are so many good players, but there's only one best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's good is we're not sitting here going, I think Beth Mead should have won it. How the hell did Piteas win it?
Yeah.
It's not that at all. It's like, I think Beth Mead should have won it, but I totally get why Piteas did.
That's the silver lining. I don't think she's going to walk away from that feeling really aggrieved by that result, because also being the runner-up to a Ballon d'Or is absolutely bloody incredible in itself.
Or as Getty called her, Vivian Miedema's guest.
Yeah.
Second place Ballon d'Or, and she was a plus one on Getty's images.
That was brilliant.
Well done, Getty. Nailed it. Well, I mean, like you said, Alex, you know, this could be where, you know, Arsenal start to pick up and sort of, you know, help and assist Beth Mead in getting the final Ballon d'Or place next year by potentially winning the Champions League. How about that? Because apparently that's round the corner. So tough friendships to start for the WSL teams. You've got Arsenal versus Lyon tomorrow, Chelsea versus PSG on Thursday. What do we think here? Do we think that actually this year, Arsenal-Chelsea recruited really well, haven't had the best in sort of progressing through the Champions League. There seems to be a bit of a curse on English teams doing okay in this competition. What do we think they need to do? And do we think Arsenal and Chelsea have a good chance this year with the recruitment and the kind of successes so far they've had in the WSL?
No, I don't.
Oh, all right, straight in.
No, I don't necessarily think they've massively, especially the way they're currently playing, I don't think they've massively improved on last season. And I think the competition's only gotten better again in Europe. So it's going to be tough for them. They've both got really tough groups. And previously, maybe when we initially had the group stages, you might think, right, there's one really tough team, but I can get points off the rest. And I don't really feel like that's necessarily the case now. I think it's going to be tough. And we want it to be tough, right? It's the Champions League. It's meant to be the best of the best. But I think at the moment, Arsenal and Chelsea are maybe having a bit of a tough spell. Like, I know Arsenal are unbeaten in the WSL, but they have some injuries. They had to really grind out a result against Ajax to get into this group stages. And as we've touched on, I feel like Chelsea are still kind of finding their feet. To be coming up against Lyon and PSG, they would need to be firing on all cylinders for me to feel like they'll get a result. And listen, I could be proven wrong. I often am. But it's going to be tough. I know Lyon have quite an extensive injury list at the moment. Cascarino, Moroni, De Brits, Maritain, Hegerberg, I think, is injured as well. Yeah, there's quite a few injuries, and I don't know, maybe that could work in Arsenal's favour, but they're also missing Rafaela Souza, Leah Williamson and key central defenders. And we saw Steph Catley play there against Reading. Arsenal weren't brilliant in that game. They felt a little bit out of sorts. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. But also, I don't think they necessarily would have looked at those groups and said they're the matches we're going to get points out of either. So,
Alex, what do you think? Think this is the year?
It's Arsenal winning the Champions League. Let's go.
Yeah, not to call it too early or anything, but without playing a single game. But what would you think?
It's a tough one. Going off that last point that Rachel said there, I think the group stage is quite interesting because you can, if you look at last season, Arsenal lost against Barcelona both times, lost against Hoffenheim. They lost three matches and still made it out of the group. And you see Chelsea, who lost, I think, I'm pretty sure it was just one match, and they didn't make it out of the group. So it's like the group stage is one of those where you can't really know what happens because you can drop a lot of points and still make it out of the group, if that makes sense. So it's quite hard to predict who's going to get out of the group, especially, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal. Chelsea, I think, have the tougher group. There's been a lot of hot takes that Chelsea won't make it out, which I think is really funny. It's, you know, and it's possible. I think a lot of people do underestimate Real Madrid. Real Madrid's team is scary. We're obviously very familiar with Caroline Weir. She is having the time of her life in Real Madrid. She is playing the football of her life, and that itself is scary. And then you look at the team that Real Madrid have around them. You have Ateneo del Castillo, who's easily one of the most talented young players that there is right now. Behind her, you have Olga Carmona, who had an amazing game against England in the Euros. I think her Euros was really, really good, and her confidence levels are really high right now. And then you have the rest of the midfield. Then you have, you know, Feller coming off the bench, I think is just ridiculous because she's an outstanding player and she is stupidly fast. So if you have a player like that coming off the bench, you know, if you're going up against a Millie Bright, maybe can be outpaced by a really, really pacey player. You know, Jess Carter, we've seen all these players being outpaced by really strong wingers. So you look at certain things that can be exploited and you look at the non-consistency that Chelsea have had. I think it could be possible. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think Chelsea's group is really, really hard and Chelsea have the possibility of not making out again. Arsenal, I think, will get through because I think they still have that superiority over Juventus that they can get it across the line. I'm not saying it's going to be easy because I think my prediction, if you guys want to hear it, is that Arsenal is going to lose to Juventus once.
Okay.
And win the second time, but make it out of the group, if that makes sense.
I think as well with Juventus, they've got that connection with Montemuro. Lena Hurtig has obviously just come from there. So there feels like there's an added level of spice in that game too.
Definitely. But we're definitely going to lose against Lyon.
Wow. Okay,
I think despite the injuries, Lyon, where Arsenal struggle with the most, I think right now, is the midfield. And despite injuries, Lyon's midfield is the strongest. So where Lyon's strength remains despite injuries is where Arsenal's weakness is. So I think that's where Lyon could potentially... I mean, DVD scoring is just written in the narrative already. That's going to happen.
Absolutely.
For sure. But I think Lyon's strengths can exploit Arsenal a little bit. But I am also really excited to see Viv and Blackstenius go up against a very watered down Lyon defensive line.
Thing is, you need to be at your best playing Champions League, and it is not ever going to be, it's never going to get easier. Mm-hmm. From now on, I think the Champions League is only going to get more difficult because teams are just getting better and better. And it's come at almost like maybe a tricky time for Chelsea and Arsenal in the season. They've only got three games under their belt, and they've got some injuries in the squad, and a lack of consistency, as you said, Alex. So... yeah, I can't decide. I feel like maybe it's a good thing that they're getting the hardest game out of the way first, maybe, just to kind of get it done and dusted and you know, play the hardest game maybe when they're at their weakest, which isn't the worst thing in the world. You wouldn't want to be playing the games you're expecting to maybe get points in when you're feeling a little bit vulnerable.
So, not to put the flagpoles in the sand again, but do we think the WSL clubs are expecting to compete for the trophy this year? We think we're going to make them out of... We think Arsenal and Chelsea are going to just about make it out of group stages, but do we think they're going to progress? Because that's something we've not really done.
Not, I just don't feel like we're there yet, but I also think that's okay because the teams that are regularly getting going far in the Champions League are in the Champions League every season, and you almost take for granted what that does for you in terms of playing top quality teams more regularly. You know, obviously we often have, it's generally Chelsea, Arsenal or Man City that are one of the top three, and we've only had that third spot for a couple of years now, but over the last kind of 5-6 years, each of those teams have missed out on the Champions League once or twice. Mm-hmm. And that does actually impact you. That consistency impacts you. That opportunity to be playing these top teams, for to give your squad the experience of playing top teams and playing abroad in Europe, is really, really valuable. And I think we're maybe a few more seasons away from an English team maybe winning it, because at the moment I also feel like, say with your Chelseas, they are desperate to win the Champions League, but it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a couple of seasons, and it feels like every season something else changes in order to try and go further in the Champions League. And it's hard to bed something like that in so quickly. Like, we're already here playing PSG, and it's, you know, you've only had 3 games under your belt. It's only October. It's very hard to bring in a Champions League winner, which they tried to do with someone to win the Champions League for you, I should say, which they did with Pernilla Harder. I know she hasn't won it. She's like one of the best players to never won the Champions League, which is ridiculous. But, you know, and they got to the final when they brought her in. But it's that kind of almost desperation to go far in the competition, and it's not going to get easier. So it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a period of being used to, and the group stages are relatively new. It's going to take a period of getting used to these group stages. I think they're going to do wonders for the English teams that get in them because they're being exposed to such good football. But it's just, I think, going to take a little bit more time.
Okay. All right. I like that. I think that's... Yeah, I agree with that logic.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't often agree, but...
We regularly agree, Chloe. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you've made some really valid points that I will take on board and take away with me.
Thank you.
As well, with Chelsea, I think especially, I think I'm not too sure how the kind of absence of Emma Hayes is going to affect things. I don't know whether that's going to be kind of like a rallying thing, that they're going to want to really do it this season, put everything in it to be with Emma and to kind of like get that for her, or whether actually it's going to be something that that is a weakness for them.
She's still very much involved, I've heard, on the phone from the couch.
Watching
She's
everything.
In the ear at training, yes. In the ear at matches. So she is still kind of involved.
Back.
No, yeah. Exactly. That woman is a very, very hard worker.
Well, we will cover the Champions League games results. It's obviously all kicking off on Wednesday and Thursday this week. We've got Zurich v Juventus, Bayern v Rosengard, Barcelona v Benfica, Lyon v Arsenal, Velaznia v Real Madrid and Wolfsburg v St. Poulton. So we will cover those, obviously, because they're really important games. But yeah, guys, I mean, we've pretty much done a massive run through of a massive week.
It was beefy.
At this point, I'm expecting that you're just going to say your weekend's going to be chilling out and relaxing, but there's a lot to do. Alex, where are you going to be this weekend?
Off to Lyon tomorrow for Lyon Arsenal.
Nice.
And then trying to Paris for PSG Chelsea. So that's going to be my week. Weekend's actually going to be relaxing. Well, my fam's visiting, so you can, I guess, as relaxing as you can. And then Sunday, I get to play football, so that's...
Oh, nice.
That's my moment of relaxation, if we win. But yeah, Champions
League.
How's
your season going so far, just out of curiosity?
Well, when I'm there, last time I was there, we won, so let's just leave it
at
that.
Oh, I see, right. Yeah, of course, yeah. 100% success record when Alex is on the pitch. You heard it here, yeah. Rach, where are you up to?
So I will be following in Alex's footsteps. I will be doing Lyon and then a train up to Paris for PSG Chelsea, and then Aston Villa Everton on Saturday and Leicester Man United on Sunday.
That'll be a good game. That'll be a very good game. Don't know what Leicester are going to bring, and also Man United on such a strong form.
I think another 4-0 for Man United, personally.
Do you reckon?
They're loving the 4-0s at the moment, yeah.
Well, it all works in my favour because I've called it.
Because you didn't mention that
did I not
three
mention
times
that?
Already.
Did I not? That's like half the pod. I will be over in Bristol. We take on Bristol City, weirdly enough, in Bristol.
PTSD after that Conte Cup match?
I don't remember it because I don't focus on the negatives, actually. It's just the mentality that I have. Thanks, Rach. So yeah, that's where I'll be this weekend. And then obviously be catching up with the Champions League game, seeing how everyone gets on. But I think that's it. I think that's massively it. Thanks so much for listening to Upfront. If you've got any questions, hit us up on Twitter. I am at Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball. Or Alex is, really helpfully, at AlexIbasetta23. We will see you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.